Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. My name is John Schmelk. Joining me is Paul Dottino. And, Paul, preseason's gone. No more sitting out there watching training camp practices. This stuff on Sunday counts, and it's against a division rival on the road. Got to get going. You got to start the season fast, especially considering what the Giants' schedule looks like.
Well, you know, first, John, I love training camp practices, so boo-hoo to you.
Come on. You're telling me on August 17th, watching that next-to-last practice, you're not saying to yourself, let's play some games that count?
Well, you know, I get that, but at the same time, I really like to pick the dark horses and the wild cards and the guys who are fighting for roster
but
spots.
But by August 17th, you've picked them already, though. You've picked them by August 17th.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Well, anyway, folks, bottom line is the Giants and the Redskins go at it for real on Sunday, and at least for the time being, we know who the Giants 53 are. Now, that doesn't mean that those 53 will be here in another week. There could be a waiver claim or something else happened between now and then. But for the time being, these are the 53 that Tom Coughlin has to go to FedEx Field with. And we'll compete against Washington. I'll tell you what, though, John. The one thing that happened the other day during the final cutdown day that surprised me, although perhaps it should not have on the basis of things that were told to me during the week, is that Weatherford did beat out Dodge for the punting job. Now, I know you guys probably talked about this a bit yesterday on your show, but to me, that was a very, very interesting decision because Weatherford, while being the more surgical punter, while being the more directional punter, nonetheless, Matt Dodge has a terrific leg. And I tell you what, you know, I'm one who's very quick to admit when he's wrong. And you know that I really gave Matt Dodge a hard time last year because, let's face it, he did not perform very well. But he won me over. I thought he had a terrific training camp. I thought he had a terrific preseason. And when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And I think Matt Dodge is going to have a good career in this league.
Yeah, I agree. Matt Dodge is actually one of the two roster spots I got wrong when I did my final 53 last Friday. And I thought in the end they would say, look, Matt Dodge is more potential. Competition brought the best out of him. He played well in the preseason games, and they would go with him. But saying that, I understand the Weatherford decision. He's a guy that, frankly, you probably trust a little bit more. He has a much better track record of being consistent, not making that one big mistake that's going to kill the team. And from a coach's perspective, quite frankly, I'd probably rather have the guy that's not going to make the big mistake that's going to cost you and maybe has, you know, 5 yards less on his
and I don't think there's any doubt that Weatherford's a quality kicker. I mean, he's done it for 3 years in this league, first with Jacksonville and then with the Jets. Now he's going to do it for the Giants. You're absolutely right. He is a known commodity, and it's not as though they're suffering a huge drop-off because, quite honestly, Weatherford has a decent leg. It's not like you know, they're giving up, you know, 8 yards a kick. That's not the case here.
Right.
So, you know, I remember when Mike Horan was here some years ago when Dan Reeves brought him in from Denver, and Horan was really on his last leg, so to speak. And he was a directional kicker, but to expect him to even kick a 50-yarder was a lot because Horan just did not have a lot of leg strength left. That's not the case with Weatherford. This guy's going into his prime.
By the way, folks, we are taking your calls this morning, as you do every morning on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. The call number is 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Give us a call. We'll get you up, or you can send in your questions via Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. And, Paul, talking about the 53, we had a chance to talk to the four rookie linebackers yesterday that did end up making this roster. The two undrafted guys, Hurdlitz and Paysinger. Then, of course, the two draft picks who were really not that big of a surprise, Jaquan Williams and, of course, Greg Jones. And you actually asked Coach a question during his press conference yesterday. How does it help the team having the four young guys? And I thought his answer was pretty interesting.
Actually, it was having 10 rookies on the roster. Not
four
just
of them
being
the linebackers, right.
That whole unit has been overhauled. But, yeah, he chuckled first. I actually got a chuckle out of Coach Coughlin. And he's like, well, I guess it's a good thing. It's got to be a good thing.
And for once, he wasn't laughing at you.
Oh, thanks, Sean. But, hey, the truth is, this team has an infusion of youth and enthusiasm and hunger. And you know what? As Coach said, that's a good thing. As long as he can rein these guys in and he makes sure that they know what it is they have to do. Problem with rookies, John, as you know, many times they just don't get things exactly right. I mean, Pat Kerwin, who works for Sirius, a longtime NFL executive, he always goes by the theory that when an NFL rookie comes out of the tunnel on game day, he loses immediately 30% of what he thinks he knows just because of his nerves and then getting out there on the field. It just starts to evaporate.
Well, look at Matt Dodge last year.
Yeah. I mean, good example. I mean, he had the yips constantly throughout the course of the season. Now, are these rookies going to play like rookies? Yeah, probably for a while. You know, but what you hope is that none of those things damage you, or that each guy has his yip in a position where or a spot where you can manage it and overcome it.
Well, that's why these guys are going to be on special teams. It's a lot easier to hide a small mistake on a special teams play than it is on a defensive play.
Not if it goes for six.
Well, you have enough guys out there that are going to help you. If you're playing linebacker and you're manned up with LeSean McCoy or Brent Celek and you do something stupid, you're looking at a 75-yard pass play for a touchdown. On a special teams play, you can hide yourself a little bit easier and guys can pick up for you a little bit.
Well, I tell you what, though, John, the four backers are exciting. They all earned their spots. I mean, Jaquan Williams had three sacks and seven tackles in the second half against New England after Clint Sinton went down with the injury. So you can't shake your head at any of these guys and say, well, gee, why did they make it? All four of these guys deserve to be on this team. And quite honestly, while Herzlick is getting a lot of the press because he was the fellow who overcame bone cancer, and that's wonderful. It's a great story. The truth of the matter is, in my mind, I think Greg Jones may be the guy of the four who has the most long-term upside.
No question. And, well, and not surprisingly, he was the highest draft pick of the four. He's a guy who had a lot of production in Michigan State. I know Carl Banks likes what he sees from him in practice. He doesn't have any wasted steps to the ball. As Carl Banks likes to say, he flows naturally to the holes where the ball is going. It's something that, obviously, a guy like me and you probably is not going to notice that watching practice, but a guy like Carl Banks will.
Well, I tell you what, it's a great comment by Banks, flowing to the ball. What I like to say is guys who can avoid traffic. And Philip Dillard, who had been drafted last year, used to get what they call it caught in the laundry or caught in the wash. Because what happens to an inside linebacker a lot of times is the blockers will come at him and he just gets all tied up and he just can't avoid blockers. And he has trouble getting to the ball carrier because he's constantly getting tied up in traffic. Bodies are flying left and right and he just doesn't avoid them well enough to get to where he's got to go to make the play. Well, Dillard constantly got caught in the wash. That's why he was really never going to amount to much in the NFL. Maybe in college he could avoid that, but not here. Greg Jones does not get caught in the wash. As Banks says, he flows to the ball. That's why he makes plays.
Now, he doesn't have that sideline-to-sideline speed that a first-round or second-round linebacker would. Otherwise, guess what? He would have got picked in the first or the
He's
second
round. He's quicker than you think.
He's quicker, but he doesn't have that breakneck, 40 speed. And that's combine numbers, probably why he dropped to where he did in the draft.
Right.
In addition to some reduced production he had his last year at Michigan State when their defense really had some, serious issues that didn't have a whole lot to do with him. But Greg Jones could be a future solution at middle linebacker here. But quite frankly, and we got a couple calls about this yesterday, and people were looking to replace Jonathan Goff. From what I could tell, the coaching staff and front office is pretty happy with what Jonathan Goff has become as a middle linebacker. They really have.
He's shown a lot of upside, John. I think he had a very good camp, a good preseason. He looks like he's improved. Now, what you have to understand about Goff is that last year was his first full season in the NFL as a starter. And I thought he started out well, pretty solid in the middle of the season. But as the season got down into its last third, Jonathan Goff's production started to decline. And he wasn't as effective as he had been earlier. Now, was that because it was his first full NFL season? Maybe. Was it because he was banged up? Was it because he was tired? Was it, did he run out of gas? I don't know what the reasons were, but I do know that Jonathan Goff had to reverse that trend. He had to get better coming into this season if he was going to be an effective starting middle linebacker for this team. And to this point, I see that turnaround. Again, it's only a month in. We've only gone through the preseason and the training camp. But as I look at it, I think Jonathan Goff maybe has gotten pushed by Greg Jones. Maybe that was the impetus that helped make him better. Or maybe he just did it on his own. I don't know. But I think Jonathan Goff looks like a better player today that he was last December.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. And the thing about Goff that you like is that you know he's not going to make any assignment mistakes. That's the first thing. He's a very smart guy. He understands the plays. And for a middle linebacker to find one now, it was a lot of these middle linebackers even like to avoid contact. They don't like to fill that hole, take on a blocker. Goff's willing to do that between the tackles and basically you know, put his body out there. And a lot of these linebackers don't like to do that now. Goff is more than willing to get his head in there and get messy.
I've seen him make several really strong, solid hits during his limited preseason time this month that shows me he definitely wants to do that, John. He wants to be more assertive. He wants to make some more big hits. And everybody knows, look, it doesn't take a genius. You can sit there in the stands and see it. When a defender makes a big hit, it riles up his teammates. It riles up the crowd. That then fuels the team as an entity on the sidelines. Big hits can do a lot for a team. And it looks to me like Goff wants to make more of those. And that's a good thing.
All right, I want to talk about one other piece of news, Paul, that broke, I guess, yesterday at some point. Osi Mounir will not play in week one, which really is not much of a surprise. Coach Coughlin said last Friday it was a touch-and-go scenario.
Yeah.
But he will not play this Sunday against the Redskins. We'll see as we move forward. What impact does that have on the Giants' defense, on the defensive line? Obviously, Jason Pierre-Paul will probably get the start and end there opposite Justin Tuck. How do you think that affects the team and how they go about their business?
Well, JPP will get more snaps, clearly, but Dave Tollefson is also going to be into that rotation. And, you know, the thing about Tollefson is that he gives you everything he's got. You know, he's obviously not JPP. He's not Osi Mounir. He's not Mathias Kiwanuka. But he's a scrapper. I mean, he goes out there and he studies hard. And he's physical. And he gives you 1,050%. You know, he's the kind of guy who you root for. Because he's just a blood and guts, blue-collar overachiever who breaks his butt. So, you know, you got to be happy for Tollefson to have an opportunity to get extra snaps this weekend against the Washington Redskins. Will it hurt the Giants? You know what? Against the Redskins, I'm not so sure it hurts them all that much because we're not talking about the most potent passing game in the league. We're talking about Rex Grossman, who's been named their starter, who is, in my mind, not much more than a journeyman quarterback. It would be much more difficult if the Giants were facing Drew Brees this week, let's say, okay? With all due respect to Mr. Grossman, again, he is an NFL quarterback, but you get what I'm saying, John.
I should point out, by the way, that the Giants have not announced anything regarding OC status. That was simply reports yesterday that were claiming that. So we'll see when and if the Giants do announce something regarding OC status. We'll, of course, have it right here on Giants.com as the week moves forward. The Giants have had a lot of success, Paul, against the Redskins. You've been doing this a long time, and obviously the balance in this series between these two teams have kind of flip-flopped back and forth a lot over the last 30 or so years. You've been covering the team. Now, at least for the last few years, it has dipped very heavily in favor of the Giants. Why?
Well, I mean, you just look at the talent. I mean, look, there was nothing better. And John, I don't know how many of our listeners are the older variety or the younger variety, but boy, when the Gibbs and Parcells Giants-Redskins battles, you know, were being waged, that was like a feast. I mean, that was like going to the buffet and just going back for more and more and more and more and more. I mean, those were classic games, you know. And I'll be honest with you, as somebody who loves the NFL and who loves pro football, those are the kinds of games that I want to see more of. Yes, it's great, and I appreciate every Giants fan out there who's probably listening here on Giants.com who says, oh, I'd rather beat the Redskins 35-7. And I get that, and I understand that. But my goodness, when you're watching a game like that, don't you sometimes say to yourself, wow, I remember the days when it was LT and Banks and Carson going up against Riggins and Theismann and Art Monk. And oh, man, you talk about some classic battles. Those were so much fun. The Giants and the Niners, the Giants and the Cowboys and the Eagles and the Redskins. Even they had some games with the Bears in the 80s that were just a blast. And, you know, I will tell you, John, over the years, I've kind of missed some of those battles because they were, as they say, instant classics nowadays. You know, they throw them on the TV right away and the repeats and stuff. I do appreciate this rivalry very much. But I also, in some small way, long for the days of when it was in its heyday back in the 80s.
It's kind of like the Yankees-Royals, where you remember when that was such a great rivalry back in the day. And even Yankees-Mariners, when they were battling in the 90s. And now those two franchises just, obviously they're not doing too well, and the games just aren't the same.
Yeah, it's not. And you know, I mean, you've been to those games, John. You know what that's like. It's like, oh, man, something's missing. You know, it's like, come on, Kansas City, wake up, wake up. Or in this particular case, the Redskins, wake up, wake up. Make this a game, you know. And, again, I understand every Giants fan out there just wants to win, and that's great. But there's something to be said for great, great football and great, great rivalries. And, yeah, I do miss those Gibbs Parcells days a little bit.
And, you know, the funny thing about it, we were having this conversation late last week, Paul, when I was doing the show with Lance last Friday. And we basically were going through how pathetic the Redskins quarterback situation has been over the last, really, 20 years. And we couldn't think of, besides McNabb, who obviously is a, you know, potential Hall of Fame type of quarterback, but he got there at the end of his career, obviously. Since Mark Rippon, name me one guy that's quarterback the Redskins that you would want quarterback in your team.
Well, he was at the end of the rope, but Jeff Hostetler was there for a very short time.
I'm not taking Haas. He was like, what, 35 when he got there?
He was
there.
Done.
Yeah.
He was done.
I mean, the Heath Schulers of the world, the Gus Frerotts of the world.
Wow.
I mean, you have some winners in there.
A lot of guys who should have been career backups, who never should have gotten a chance to start and started games for them. Yeah, you're right. I agree with you. There's nobody there who I would want to draft on my football team in the last 20 years. I agree with you.
Shula was what, like the third or fourth pick overall in that draft?
Out of Tennessee.
Dilfer was one and Shula was two. Was that how that draft went away? I'm trying to remember.
I can't remember if Dilfer was picked before him or not.
But I believe they were picked back-to-back in the first round, if I remember right. Oh, Trent Green, another. He actually was probably one of the better Redskin quarterbacks, Trent Green, but then he hurt himself so quickly.
Yeah, he was better after he left.
Yeah, when he went to Kansas City.
You know?
You're 100% right.
So, you know, I can't count him either.
And you know what? And I'm going to use this as a larger point here. To all the Giant fans that I talk to a lot that complain about Eli Manning, and you hear fans everywhere that, you know, complain about their quarterbacks. You know, Cowboy fans complain about Tony Romo. You're Giant fans on Manning. When the Eagle fans used to complain about McNabb when he didn't win them their Super Bowls. Whoever you want to talk about, understand what you have. Because Giant fans, just go back 10 years here when you're juggling between Danny Cannell, Dave Brown, and Graham. And look, believe me, be very happy you have Eli Manning as your starting quarterback.
Well, why don't you go back to the days of the Yale Bowl and talk about Craig Morton?
Well, because I was negative 15 years old. That's
yeah, well, I mean, you know, and of course Joe Prozarczyk, and I mean, there have been a share of doozies here too now, John. Every franchise has its share. The question is, how long do you have them, and then when do you finally uncover that golden nugget? Of which I do believe Eli Manning is.
201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. We have some giant questions coming in on Twitter. You can submit yours at hashtag Giants Chat. This one comes in from Alexandra Baca. Paul, she wants to know, and it's a pretty generic question, but I think it's a good one. What should we be most excited about for the Giants this season? What part of this team gets you excited? I want to watch this part of this team play.
Well, you know from sitting here with me, John, it's the defense. I think if the Giants are going to do anything this year, it's going to be on the shoulders of this defense.
Come on, be more specific.
More specific?
Yeah, more specific than the defense.
I love the line. How could you not?
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, even with OC missing or potentially missing a game or two or three or whatever it turns out to be, how can you not love this defensive line? Chris Candy looks terrific. Kiwi looks terrific, and I do count him still somewhat as a lineman because in the sub-package, when he's the most dangerous rusher in the quarterback, he will be a down lineman. JPP has just come out like a house of fire. Looks like he's just ready to wreak havoc on opponents. And Justin Tuck is Justin Tuck. What you see is what you get with him. He just doesn't change.
And, Paul, the Redskins, by the way, we should bring this up. Yesterday did announce who their starting quarterback is going to be, and it's going to be Rex Grossman. He's going to have to deal with that pass rush that you just mentioned on the Giants defensive line. And Grossman actually played pretty well against the Giants in the final week of the year last year.
He
put a nice little game together. But we've seen during his career he does not handle pass pressure particularly well.
No, he does not. And, you know, so the Giants will sick the dogs after him and see if they can turn him over a few times. And, you know, if he does, it'll spell trouble for Washington.
201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. John Schmelk, Paul DeTino with you right here on Giants.com. Let's go back to Twitter, and let's take a question from Jason Capoletti. And this is one of the points that I made before. Jason asked Paul, do you think Eli is good enough to play with the current wide receivers that we have? Do they run the most precise routes, which Eli Manning needs to succeed. And I'm going to go back to the point here where, look, they had some pretty good success with Nixon Manningham last year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, John, obviously everything goes hand in hand. The quarterback has to do his job. The receivers have to do their jobs. And then that means the offense does its job. We get that. We understand that. At the same time, you know, for everybody who is down on Eli, and I know our VP of communications here at the Giants, Pat Handlin, likes to get on me sometimes.
A little bit.
Just a little bit. But, you know, can you blame me sometimes when I sit there and I kind of let my mind wander back to Amani Toomer and Plexico Burress? I mean, look, I understand that they're not here anymore, but every once in a while you just let your mind wander and you appreciate truly how great those guys were. I mean, and maybe sometimes that's what happens with fans. They get a little spoiled about things. Amani Toomer is the most accomplished, most prolific wide receiver in this franchise's glorious history. And, you know, you just don't replace guys like that very easily. I think Akeem Nix is a Pro Bowl caliber receiver. I think he will continue to get better. But, you know, he's got a long way to go before he's going to be Amani Toomer. And quite honestly, Plexico Burress, during the 3.5 years that he played here, helped this team win a Super Bowl and was, in my mind, was one of the top five receivers in the game at that particular time. He wore the Giants blue. So, yeah, I get the fact that you maybe not real excited about Manningham or Cruz or one of these other guys. Yeah, I get all of that. But at the same time, you have to understand this is what the Giants have, and they're going to do the best that they can do with these guys. And quite honestly, it's going to be an offense that will rely much more on the running game this year than it has in the last couple of seasons. And that should be rather effective.
You know, we actually spoke about that yesterday as well. We had a caller call up and ask us. And by the way, you can give us a call today at 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513, Paul. And the caller asked us whether or not the Giants are going to get back to running the ball more this year. And as you know, Coach Coughlin is a power running coach. That's what he wants to do. And I think with Bradshaw and Jacobs both pretty healthy at this point, Bradshaw obviously had the back thing in the preseason, but that should be fine for regular season week number one. I think we're going to see a very, very focused running attack.
I agree with you totally, John. And I think based on what we've seen during practice and their limited reps in the preseason, Bradshaw and Jacobs look like they really have an overflowing gas tank right now. Of course, it's early, and we don't know how they'll be feeling in November and December. But these two guys are running with gusto, with speed, with power, quickness. I mean, they look right now about as explosive as I've ever seen them.
201?
You know, that's good.
No question. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Let's go to our phones and say hello to Joe in New Jersey. Joe, what's going on, pal?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Joe, doing great. What's up, pal?
I just wanted to know, Donald Lee was just waived by the Eagles. Why aren't the Giants bringing him in to take a look?
Well, you know, Joe, I would say this to you. Donald Lee, who had a pretty good career with the Packers, signed with the Eagles just a couple of weeks ago, and they're already cutting him. Now, usually that's not a good sign.
On the bright side for Philly, he didn't retire like Ben Patrick did. But
no, I mean, you have to raise a red flag there. And quite honestly, I'm not sure that, A, he's got much left, and, B, I don't know that he's necessarily what the Giants need right here. I think the Giants need a guy who's going to be a mauler at the tight end position more than anything else. They need a scrappy, physical, nasty mauler to help that offensive line get the running game going. And I'm not so much interested in a guy who's going to be a finesse tight end or a guy who's going to go out and catch a lot of passes.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, Joe, appreciate the call. Now, Paul, you aren't concerned at all about trying to find the weapon that you can use over the middle of the field, because as Coach Coughlin said in one of his post-game press conferences in the preseason, I think it was after game number 3 against the Jets, the Giants did not go to the air a lot down the middle of the field in the preseason. Everything was outside the hashes, outside the numbers.
You're right, John, they didn't. And that's an Achilles right now for this team. But I go back to Vince Lombardi. Vince would always want to pound it, pound it, pound it. Run it, run it, run it, run it. And he would always tell people, I don't care if you know what's coming. We're going to be physical. We're going to be strong. We're going to be precise. We are going to execute. And there's nothing you can do to stop us. Well, you know what? I think if the Giants load up on the running game and they just take it to people and sock them in the mouth, that's still the best way to go. It doesn't matter if you're telegraphing that right hook, because if it hits you, it's going to knock you down.
We got a bunch of questions coming in on Twitter. I'll put two into one here. Ryan Penny wants to know, are the Giants concerned about a potential lack of depth at the cornerback position? And relating to that, Chris Russo, I don't think it's the Chris Russo. Well, it might be. Who knows? He wants to know if Terrence McGee from the Bills, he's on the free agent market. Do the Giants have any interest in him?
Hey, Johnny!
Yeah, exactly, pretty much. Paulie, Giants need a cornerback there, let's be honest.
Well, first things first, McGee wasn't cut. There were rumors that McGee was going to be cut. In fact, I talked about that on FAN the other day, and as it turned out, he was not cut.
McGee also a very good special teams player, by the way.
1 year, he averaged 30 yards per kickoff return.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
I'm not sure why. I mean, I don't think he's making a lot of money. I'm not sure why the Bills would even want to cut him loose,
well,
to be honest with you.
Well, he's been a bit of an underachiever in the secondary.
And in the secondary, yes, that's correct.
But in any case, he is still a Buffalo Bill, so you can forget about him. As far as getting more corner depth, I do think the Giants are on the lookout. But at the same time, unless they feel somebody is a dramatic upgrade over what they have right now, they're going to go with what they have and see if they can teach and coach these guys up.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. That's your phone number. Or submit your questions on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. And this question comes from Brian Lucero. He wants to know, the Giants need an impact linebacker. Why not go after Lofa Tatupu or even Lance Briggs?
Okay. Tatupu, from what I understand, his knees are pretty much shot. He does not have much left,
which is a shame. He was a very good linebacker when he was in his prime. I know Antonio Pierce used to rave to me about Lofa Tatupu and his mental approach to the game and how he understood where everyone was supposed to be. But physically, he just doesn't have it anymore.
No, he's really beaten up. And so don't think about him as a possibility. Now, the guy's just Lance Briggs. Well, here's the one thing you need to understand, and I've had people Twitter me this over the course of the last couple of days
as well. It's a tweet, by the way. They tweeted this to you,
Paul. They tweeted it to
me. Yes.
Okay, I got to get with the modern times.
Yes.
Anyway, John.
You actually have a smartphone now. I'm trying to make sure you have your lingo right, Paul.
All right.
Paul's had the flip phone since, like, until 2 weeks ago when he actually got one with a touchscreen.
Very
fancy.
What's wrong with a phone that makes phone calls, John? Anyway, Lance Briggs is a terrific talent who still has plenty left in his tank. But here's the thing. If you look at the Giants' scheme, they basically are going to scheme their way through games. They're interested in loading up on the defensive line to get pressure on the quarterback. They're interested in having hard-hitting coverage, press coverage, one-on-one safeties and corners. They're interested in sending guys from the third level to provide extra pass pressure. If you see how the Giants are constructed, they're basically going a little bit light on the linebackers to load up on the secondary and the D-line. And you can do that in this league. You can scheme that way. So for the Giants to try to go after Lance Briggs, who obviously is going to cost a lot of money and a lot in a trade, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because they should be able to effectively execute what their game plan is using the strength along the line and in the secondary.
You're right, Paul. You can make the argument now in this league. It's a passing league, so you win on defense.
Well, you see nickel and dime a lot.
You win on defense by rushing the passer and shutting down wide receivers. And you do
that
on the line, and you do that in the secondary. And this is in the 80s and the early 90s, where teams are going to, you know, run the ball 40 times a game. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Let me put it to you this way, John, and I'm going to ask the person out there doing the tweeting. I will ask him this, and, you know, feel free to look at all the NFL rosters before you now, the 32 NFL teams. And if you can pick out a team that's got a terrific linebacking core but doesn't have a good secondary or doesn't have a particularly good defensive line, and tell me that they are going to the playoffs or that they are a contender, I would tell you you're probably wrong. I mean, the game has changed. It was different 20, 25 years ago. I mean, when you could put together a great linebacking core and maybe a good front line, and you could make it happen. Or a really great linebacking core and a good secondary. And even without a good defensive line, you could probably still make it happen. But that's not the way the game is constructed today. The linebackers, I don't want to say that they're not important, because that would be wrong. But the emphasis is on the other two units now.
No, no question. And if you look at the contracts that get given out now in this league, where do the big contracts go, Paul? The big contracts go to corners, and they go to defensive ends. That's who makes all the money, and it's no surprise that that's where the money goes, because those are the guys that are going to impact the game the most now.
Yeah, and so, you know, to go after a Lance Briggs for the Giants doesn't make sense.
No question. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to Twitter. You can send in your questions via Twitter to hashtag GiantsChat. This question comes from Danny B. With the Giants slot receiver still in question, how will this affect the dynamics, Paul, of the Giants offense?
Well, I don't know if that's really true, John. We've seen Manningham play some slot during the course of the preseason, which the Giants may or may not do against Washington.
Correct.
We know that they did want to give Victor Cruz an opportunity to win the slot job, which he's won a roster spot, but I don't think he's really won that slot
job. I'm going to rephrase Danny B's question. How about this? I'm going to go at it from this perspective. Obviously, Steve Smith could arguably be, probably when he was healthy, a top five slot guy in the league. He's right in the category with the Wes Welkers and all those guys.
I thought he was the best in the NFC.
He might have been. He might have been. I'll even go top three NFL. He's excellent, okay? The Giants obviously are trying to work somebody in there now. And in that slot spot, he was Eli Manning's go-to guy on third downs, especially third and intermediate, third and five, third and seven, possessions like that. Where are the Giants going to go for that now? You just mentioned two or three guys. I don't know with any certainty, to be perfectly honest with you, Paul, who's going to be trotted out there on Sunday as the slot guy. Is it going to be Victor Cruz like we saw in the third preseason game? Is it going to be Manningham moving inside and Hickson being outside like we saw at practice a lot in the preseason? I'm curious to see how they're going to end up handling this situation. Or are you going to see Beckham out there a lot, and they're going to use him as an H-back split out wide in the slot? There's a lot of different ways they can go here, and I think it'll be interesting to see how Kevin Gobert uses his personnel.
Well, part of it may just have to do with matchups. You know, how many times have you heard coaches say, we need to get a favorable matchup? It may come down to mixing and matching who those guys are going to be on a given week, depending upon what the other team is putting out on the field. Maybe one week it will be Beckham, who's going to primarily be the slot guy. Maybe in another week it will primarily be Manningham. It's possible that they look across the line of scrimmage and say, hey, you know what? That team has this guy, this guy, and this guy. We think Manningham could work on him. Oh, no, we don't like that matchup. We think Beckham is bigger and stronger than the guy they're going to put in the slot, so we're going to go with Beckham this week. It may turn out that the Giants mix and match, at least for the first few weeks of the season.
All right, now let's go back to the Twitter page. We got a lot of questions coming in. Good job by the fans today at hashtag Giants Chat. And this one comes from Sergio Gomez, and this comes from Paul, one of the potential slot guys you were talking about, or third wide receiver guys you were talking about, Dominic Hickson. This is what Sergio writes. It is completely unacceptable for a punt returner to bobble kickoff and punt returns, ? Hickson will be the return man, right? And it sounds like he's kind of begging.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I would be very surprised if Dominic Hickson is not returning punts against the Redskins on Sunday. Tom Coughlin would not rule that out yesterday during his media briefing. And, I think that's more gamesmanship than anything else. I don't think he wants to show his hand. But it would seem to me that the Giants are going to have to go back to Hickson. They tried to avoid it because he's coming off the ACL surgery. They did not want to put undue stress on his knee during training camp. And they also wanted him to concentrate as much as possible on being a wide receiver. But the regular season is here. They have really not found an effective punt returner. Jernigan has not gotten the job done. I think it's time to pull the plug on that experiment and get Hickson back there.
And that doesn't say that you're going to pull the plug on that experiment forever. But the bottom line is, when you use a guy in four preseason games, then a guy like Jernigan, and he, you know, muffs or fumbles, frankly, nearly 50% of his opportunities, for a team that had so many turnover problems last year, it's kind of hard to justify putting him in out there in the first regular season game when, I mean, that's hard to say he proved it, but he showed in a lot of instances that he's not ready to do it at this level. It's just what he showed in the preseason.
And it is a division game, John. I mean, Not that any games are less important, but division games certainly take on an added significance. The Giants cannot afford to have muffs, fumbles, mistakes made in the punting game, or in that matter, any of the three facets of the game against the Redskins on Sunday. So I would think Hickson's going to be back there.
And the way, I mean, you hear Tom Coughlin in his press conferences talking about ball security, and you know Hickson can catch the ball, and a mistake in that can kill your field position for one, and it can also turn into scores for the other team.
I will add one thing, though, to the tweeter. I will say this. Tom Coughlin does like Jarrell Jernigan. He thinks that the player is very responsible, eager to learn, does have an explosive skill set, and I think in the worst way, the Giants wanted him to seize that job. Now, at the moment, he was unable to do so. But I do think that they're going to do whatever they can to coach him up in practice. And you're right, John. At some point during the season, we may see him get another chance. He is liked by his teammates. He's liked by his coaches. And that's half the battle. Because when a guy does poorly, if he crawls into a shell and people start losing confidence in him, then he's pretty much lost. That has not happened with Jernigan.
No, it's true. And Coach Coughlin made the point to us in a production meeting that he's a stand-up kid. You know, he'll say, you know, this is why I made a mistake. I screwed up. I did this wrong. I did A wrong. He's very hard on himself. And he doesn't make excuses, which is obviously something coaches like to see. Nothing annoys coaches more than, you know, a player that does something really stupid, goes to the sideline, and blames it on somebody other than himself. And it's good to see Jernigan is not one of those guys. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. We got some more action on the Twitter page. Send in your questions to hashtag Giants chat, and this question comes from Nicholas Cordovano. He wants to know, Paul, will the Giants defense still be an elite group in the NFC despite all the injuries? Obviously, you have OC on the line, and you have Prince Mukamura, the first-round pick, who's going to be out probably for another month or so, and then, of course, Terrell Thomas and Bruce Johnson and Brian Witherspoon all lost for the year with season-ending knee injuries.
You know, John, as odd as this is going to sound, and they were the number three-rated defense in the NFC last season, I think the Giants have the ability to be right up there again, and I really do because, first of all, Perry Fuel is still here. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the fact that Kiwanuka is back into the lineup again after missing most of last season with a neck injury. Let's talk about the fact that I think Linval Joseph is going to be a very good player. Now, at the moment, he's not Barry Cofield. I get that. But
he could become Barry Cofield.
I think
sure
he's got
he
a chance. I think he's got a chance. I think JPP is just a dynamic talent who gets better each and every week. And then, you know what? Aaron Ross, don't sell him short. Now, I know he's been injured, and I know he's had trouble staying on the field. But I also know he's a first-round talent, and I know he has had a sensational preseason and a very good training camp. Tom Coughlin said he came into camp this year with a newfound determination. And with his skill set, there's no reason why the Giants have to have a significant drop-off at that corner spot. I know Terrell Thomas was a Pro Bowl caliber player, but Aaron Ross is a very good cover
but
corner.
But that's a starting cornerback spot. There is going to be a drop-off when you bring that third corner on the field because whoever that ends up being, you're not going to have a first-round talent with the speed and the size that Aaron Ross
well,
has.
Well, again, now, this goes back to Perry Fuel because is that nickel corner going to be Antrell Roll?
Correct. That is a possibility. Are you going to see that three safety system?
Is it going to be Brian Williams? We don't know. And so this is where the master, Perry Fuel, gets to kick his feet up on his desk starts playing with that Rubik's Cube. Let's see now. I want to do this. I want to do that. We're going to do this. We're going to combo this and that. We're going to mix and match here. I'm going to do this combination. We're going to do this blitz, this coverage. I'm a big Perry Fuel fan, and I believe that he can do enough of different things with the talent that is on this team right now so that you will not see a significant drop-off in the defense's production. That's my opinion.
All right, let's go back to the Twitter page here. By the way, you can call us up. We'll go for about 15 more minutes here on Giants.com at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Also, send in your questions on Twitter to hashtag GiantsChat. Let's see. We actually got a lot of ones, a lot of good questions coming in here. Let's see if I can find one. Oh, and we should bring this up, by the way, Paul. The NFL is doing an excellent job on Sunday, and John Borkowski's question reminded me of this. It's a big 9/11 tribute Sunday for the NFL.
Yes.
You're having the 1 o'clock game where the 4 o'clock game and the Jets are playing, obviously, late that day. They're having a moment of silence before each one of these games, obviously to honor the 10th anniversary of 9/11, the attacks of 9/11. And it should be a pretty emotional day. And, there aren't any – I don't think there's anybody left from 01 on this team still.
No.
But, I think the players get it, especially the guys that have been here a while, like Justin Tuck, like Eli Manning. They get it, and you wonder how that's – you figure it's not going to affect the play at all, but it will make the pregame and then the mood, I think, heading into game time a little bit different.
Well, Kareem McKenzie's another guy who played for the Jets before he got to the
right.
Giants.
Drafted 03?
Yeah, who understands, though, the New York area and what had happened.
Right.
To this group of people. John, I was not one who traveled on the road to road games in those days. So I did watch the Giants-Kansas City game when they played following the 9/11 tragedy. And I'll tell you, even across the TV screen, it was hard not to get emotional. You know, when they played the national anthem, and they had the flyover, and there was just such a powerful feeling in Arrowhead Stadium that day, and it came through your television screen, and it just made you all weepy, and you got the chills, and it was incredibly dramatic. And then I remember when the Giants played their first home game, I guess it was against the Redskins, after the 9/11 tragedy. And again, they had the flyover with the Jets. And it just, man, it's a feeling that you can't really describe. I mean, I'm trying, but you get the goosebumps and the chills, and you just get this almost out-of-body experience from dramatic moments like that. And I honestly don't know how it's going to affect these players on Sunday. I really don't. I suspect that it's going to be another one of those very dramatic moments that I just talked about. Will it alter their focus? Will it enhance their focus? Only they know.
And it's going to be on both sides, obviously, because they're playing the Washington
Without
Redskins.
Question.
And, of course, you had
the
attacks on the
Pentagon
the same day.
Absolutely. So is it something that the NFL needs to do and wants to do and is right to do? Absolutely. How it's going to affect folks? I don't know, John. I really don't know. I think everybody who was in an NFL stadium on Sunday, especially in the areas of Pittsburgh, Washington, and New York, they will reflect back to what they thought about the day it happened, or for that matter, the Sunday following when they got back into a stadium again.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. And, of course, you can also send in your questions on Big Blue Kickoff Live to hashtag GiantsChat. And, Paul, let's go back to some football talk here. Another question comes in from Jason Capoletti. I think this is interesting. When we talked about punts a lot, who's going to do punt return duty? How about kick return duty? Obviously, we had Devin Thomas do a lot of the stuff in the preseason for the Giants on kicks. Now, Jason wants to suggest Darrell Scott as a potential kick returner. Obviously, he has the speed in the combine. He can take hits. He's a pretty, solidly built guy. He's low to the ground. He looks like someone that physically should be able to do it. Your thoughts on maybe trying out Darrell Scott? I'm not sure if Darrell Scott ever returned kicks in college, to be honest with you. I'm not sure.
In 2007, he averaged over 20 yards a kickoff return for Maryland. But he basically only did it for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got away from that and focused on him running the football. Do you let Darrell Scott try it? I'm inclined to allow Devin Thomas to keep the job. He's done it before in the NFL. He's a veteran. You pretty much know what you got with him. I know he had that one muff a couple of games ago. I appreciate that. I get that.
It's going to happen sometimes, though. You can't be perfect.
I'm inclined to use Thomas's speed and allow him to return kickoffs for the time being. I would say at some point down the road, if he can't get it done or if he should get banged up, I would consider Darrell Scott. I would consider him, but not right now.
201-939-4513. 201-939-4513.
And you know, John, don't forget, Hixon can do it too.
Obviously, Hixon can do kicks as well. And you got to wonder, though, I think the worry with Hixon is even the knee. But if they plan on using him a lot in the offense, which I think still is a pretty distinct possibility, he could see 20, 25 snaps on offense every game. Do you want to, you know, risk an injury on special teams to a guy you're going to use a wide receiver? And it's the same thing they always have with Aaron Ross, who's been begging to do punts here since he got here. Every time he walks off the practice field after doing punt returns, he looks like a kid in a candy store.
Corey Webster, too.
Corey Webster's the same deal.
You should see him. He's like, oh, yeah, let me catch a few of those.
But now, especially with all the injuries they've had at cornerback.
Can't do it.
You can't throw any of those two guys
no.
out there. No chance. But
I'd rather than throw you out there.
I will catch the football, Paul. I will get murdered afterwards, but I will catch the football. But I think with a guy like Hixon, I think you can roll the dice and throw him out there on kicks and punts and you know, and hope he stays healthy.
Well, he knows what he's doing.
Right.
That in itself is an accomplishment because it's not an easy job.
No, because you have to know when to call the fair catch. If you don't call the fair catch
exactly.
And you quickly look down.
When to run out of bounds.
Just get down.
Absolutely.
Hit the deck.
There's a lot to be said for self-preservation back there on those returns.
No question. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Also, send in your questions to our Twitter account at #GiantsChat. And you mentioned this before, Paul, and this question comes in from Giants Go Blue. And this person wants to know about Anshar role playing the slot. Obviously, he came into the league as a cornerback. Didn't have a whole lot of success there, quite frankly. That's one of the reasons he moved to safety. But how much success do you think Roll can have playing that slot position if, and now Prayful's smart, so he might not do this and he might go a lot of zone here, if he has to man up a lot of those speedy wide receivers in that slot, how well do you think he can do in that position?
I would only say this, John. We've seen Antro Roll play the slot here in one preseason game. It was against the Jets. I thought he did a very, very good job against Santonio Holmes. Virtually rendered him useless. So, do I think he's got the skill set for it? Absolutely. As you said, he played some corner in the NFL earlier in his career. He is quick. He's heady. He's physical. He's strong. He's got the size to do it. You know, if that's the way Perifuel wants to go, or even if he wants to just mix that in sometimes, I think it could be effective.
Yeah,
I really do.
It can work. I mean, you saw it last year when the Giants played that three-safety formation. Alana was certainly something that worked. When you have those three guys back there that know what they're doing.
You then have to
with
wonder,
Roll,
though,
Grant, and Phillips.
The one problem is if you're going to line him up in the slot then, and I did see him actually blitz out of the slot a couple times in that Jets game,
too. Well, they used Roll blitzing a lot end of last year, too. It's a position they like him in. They think he can get to the quarterback.
So now, if you're going to do that and you're going to go back to your three-safety scheme, that means Tyler Sash, in all likelihood, would have to play with Grant and Phillips as the third safety if you're just going to say, okay,
If you want to consider a Roll a corner.
Right. So if you go to that scheme, well, now you just have to worry about, okay, is Tyler Sash up to that task? He's certainly much more of an in-the-box safety than he is a cover safety.
201-939-4513. And, Paul, let's get into a little bit more specifics here on the Redskins matchup. Only about 5 minutes to go here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. As the Giants get ready for the Redskins here, we already mentioned Rex Grossman. The Redskins do have a new running back this year. Tim Hightower is their primary running back. He gets most of their carries, which is probably an upgrade from what they had last year. Look, Tim Hightower is not Barry Sanders or Emmitt Smith, but he's a competent NFL running back.
He's done some good things with the Cardinals.
And he's
had
a
great preseason for the
Skins.
And
he's a great pass receiver, too. He's a weapon out of the backfield in the passing game.
Yeah, he's a versatile player, and I have no doubt that they're going to lean on him heavily. After all, they have to. I mean, we talked about how Beck and Grossman are not very impressive quarterbacks, so I'm sure they're going to try to run football.
Yeah, they will, and they want to put Rex Grossman into positions where he can succeed.
Play action passing. Exactly. Short stuff.
Well, third and intermediate. You don't want Rex Grossman back, dropping back third and 11, third and 12 with Antro Roll blitzing off the slot and Tuck and OCU Manure coming off the edges. 201-939-4513. Al is up in Yonkers. What's going on, Al? How are you?
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Al, what's going on, man? Do me a favor. Turn down the speakers on your computer and just listen to your phone, okay?
All right. Hey, I'm good. I'm wondering, is there any chance that we'll take a look at Desmond Clark from the Chicago Bears and maybe Hasselio Johansson from the Philadelphia Eagles? You know, that's for obvious reasons, having a spy out, something to know about what Vic is doing or whatever, and just to have another nickel corner.
Well, Tom Coughlin made it very clear the Giants will try to upgrade whatever they possibly can. Now,
especially when he's asked about the tight end and quarterback position. But yeah. but all jokes aside, the Giants do always look at the waiver wire, and they're trying to improve at all positions.
Yeah, but here's what you have to remember. Now, there is a guarantee written into these deals for these veterans. If you sign a guy now before opening day, he's guaranteed his contract for the season. And there's a business aspect to this. There are some teams who are going to hold off on signing a free agent. And I'm not saying this is the case with the Giants because, quite honestly, each individual case has to be taken in a vacuum.
It's all different.
Uh-huh. Everything's different. Every team and every player and every situation is treating things differently. But you must understand there is a possibility that the business angle comes into play here so that if you sign a guy after the first game, he no longer gets the one-year guarantee on his contract. So that if it doesn't work out and this veteran that you bring in, for whatever reason, does not perform up to expectations, you want to be able to then jettison him without wind up paying that money against the cap.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I mean, do the Giants want Hansen? I don't know the answer to that right now. What I can tell you, though, is that from a business perspective, it's less of a risk for them if they were to bring him in next week.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's
okay,
all.
Thanks a lot, man.
Okay.
All right, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks for giving us a call right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Also, sending your questions to hashtag Giants Chat. And, Paul, the Redskins actually could have one of the better defenses in the league this year. They have a good pass rush. Arakpo's becoming slowly one of the best pass rushers in the league.
He's a good player.
Their secondary is still a little rough, but the Redskins will stop the run. But the Giants could take advantage of them through the air. Remember that Mario Manningham 90-yard touchdown reception from Eli Manning in Week 17 last year.
Well, you know, John, that's part of the problem when you say as a Giants coach, Gilbride or Coughlin, that we want to get back to the power running game. Because you know what happens? You may want to do that because that's how you want to build your identity, but then you go up against a team like the Redskins and you say, well, you know what? They got a couple of pass rushers and they can maybe get to the quarterback a little bit, but we really think that we could attack their secondary. Well, so now what do? You know, you want to become a power running team, but you see that the other team probably can't defend your pass. So do you start leaning more towards that running game that you're trying to build? Or do you start flinging it around because you know you can move the ball against them that way? It becomes a very, very hard scale to balance. And honestly, John, that is part of the reason, only part of the reason, why the Giants have become more of a pass-happy team the last couple of years. Because in many instances, they thought that they could move the ball much better against opposing teams' defenses through the air.
Right, and a lot of times they'll send Eli to the line with a run or a pass. And they'll say, Eli, look how the defense is set up here. And if you see 8-9 men in the box sometimes, you're auto-going to the pass play. If you see only 8 men, only see 7 men up there, excuse me, you're going to run it. And teams know how successful the Giants' running game has been the last few years. I mean, even last year, they were top 5 in the league in yards per carry. And you're not going to want to allow them to run the football, and you're going to make the Giants go through the air.
And you know, John, it's so, so, so difficult to put yourself in Eli Manning's shoes, to see exactly what he sees, to know exactly what he knows, so that when he makes those audible calls, you can either then say, hey, you know what? he did the right thing or no, he did the wrong thing. Everybody just wants to look at the results, but you really need to be inside the quarterback's head to understand what it is he sees. That's the only way you know if he's making the right call or not, and that's why, you know, quarterback's coach Mike Sullivan, very important part of this team. He's then got to go over the film with Eli and say, hey, Eli, when you opted out to that pass or you opted out to that run, what is it that triggered you to go that way?
Right.
So.
And you know what, though? That's what makes Eli a great quarterback. You don't complain about Eli, you know, he can't throw in the wind. All these fans complain about that. He makes bad decisions. The guy is one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league.
I've
no
been
one
saying that for years,
reads
John.
Defenses better, and giving him that choice helps the Giants. And people also tend to complain, oh, Kevin Gilbert, his offense is too complicated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it allows Eli to use one of his great assets, and that's his mind, to see what the defense is doing, adjust on the fly, and make plays.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, to me, not every quarterback could hack this system. And Eli is one of the few that can. And that's why he's here.
No question. Paul, as always, we appreciate the time. Paul DeTino will be back tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live with Anita Marks right here on Giants.com. And, of course, every morning at 9:30 on Giants.com, we take your calls at 201-939-4513. And, of course, folks, this week we have tons of coming up on Giants.com. Papa's Perspective on Thursday. Of course, we'll be airing Coach Conference press conference live tomorrow on Giants.com at 11 a.m. Make sure you're there for that. Preview report with myself, Paul, Anita, and Michael Eisen will come your way this weekend. Of course, Michael Eisen will be answering your questions via his mailbag all week on Giants.com as well. Check out all the written stories from Mike and from Dan Salamone. That'll all be there as well. There'll be tons of stuff on Giants.com all week long. And we have other stuff going on, too. We should point out there's a very special weekend coming up this weekend, and we mentioned that. It's the big 9/11 tribute. The Giants are trying to do as much as they possibly can to, you know, support the families and get out there and just remember the day. And the NFL is doing a great job with it as well. And they have to, and they're going out there and they're doing a lot to show fans and to show the league and to show the NFL that, you know, the Giants do things here the right way. And it's something that, you know, it's very special to Mr. Mara. It's very special to Mr. Tisch. It's something that it's very special, Paul, to the organization, and it's something that they do the right way. And it's approaching this Sunday, obviously. The Giants are asking fans to help them create a mosaic to honor the memory of those who lost their lives and made us proud 10 years ago. So go to Giants.com to join the mosaic. Click the Add Me button, and you can connect with your Twitter or Facebook account. As fans begin to add themselves to the mosaic, the photo will slowly reveal itself. It's created through matching the user profile picture, coordinating with it on the mosaic. It's actually pretty cool technology. Our man Neil Shah is the mastermind behind it, doing a great job with it. And upon its completion, the team will present the finished artwork to Tuesday's Children, a nonprofit organization providing support and services for children of 9/11 and others impacted by global terrorism. So make sure you go to Giants.com throughout the week to do that. It's really it's a pretty cool thing. So go there and be a part of it. It really is pretty awesome. Paul, for Paul DeTino, I'm John Schmuck. Thanks for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We'll see you next time.